The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Malia Blue for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning in to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. Share the Love off her album, Heart Sick. And you guys remember, it wasn't too long ago that we actually caught up with Malia for a live interview right here at radio-memphis.com during Radio Memphis Around the World. And she shared some pretty cool, some pretty amazing news with us that she was going to be starting to do some collaborations with a pretty, pretty stellar man. And, you know, I tell you, this is kind of one of those cool moments where Radio Memphis Around the World and Radio Memphis Booze and Blues kind of come in and crash and collide. And we are actually going to be sitting down and we're getting ready to talk to Dennis Walker. And I felt like I needed to have Rick here because, you know, he's the host of Booze and Blues, which happens every Sunday night starting at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time and rocks out until 11 o'clock. How are you doing, sir?
Hello, how are you? I'm kind of busy because I'm kind of up in the air here. I'm in the midst of exchanging messages with a very dear friend of this radio station who needs to get here this evening, and I'm trying to arrange that for him. Mr. Willie Hall, Mr. Willie Too Big Hall.
Yes. Speaking of booze and blues,
mutually exclusive, of course. Willie just sent me a message. He said, "Listen, I really need to be here tonight. Can we make this happen?" And he doesn't have he didn't have a ride, so I'm sending a message over to Joel because he and Joel are good friends, and I'm going to have Joel bring him over.
Okay, not a problem.
So find out what time Joel's going to come. And we'll make
absolutely,
that happen,
so. Absolutely. And of course, if you guys are wondering why Willie's trying to make it hot and heavy and has a beaten path to come to Radio Memphis, it is a Radio Memphis birthday. It is also not only around the world; we are celebrating 7 years live on air for the station, and so we've got a lot of crazy coolness coming on a little bit later. But first, we need to address what I've got going on right now. And as it turns out, we've got Mr. Dennis Walker that's on the phone. And if you guys don't understand who this gentleman is, you know, we're talking about, you know, Grammy Award winning songwriter, producer, musician himself, who's worked along the likes of with, you know, Robert Cray, Betty LaVette, Karen Lovely, Buddy Guy, Philip Walker, Otis Rush, Boss Gags, and the blues ambassador of the planet himself, Memphis's own B.B. King.
So, the king of Memphis blues, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. So I'm gonna bring Dennis in because we're going to chat with him. How are you doing, Dennis? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear him. Oh, you don't have... You have to put him up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello? I'm having a moment. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm better now. I can hear you.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, Rick, how you doing, man?
I am well, thank you. I don't know if you heard our little conversation there about Willie, but maybe you've had dealings with him before.
No, but I've had dealings just like that before.
Oh, I totally get it.
Fantastic. You know, Dennis, it's funny how you kind of came into our world in a roundabout way. As it turns out, you know, we do know that you are going to be doing some collaborations, and you are in the middle of collaborating and working with Malia Blue, the artist that we just got done playing, you know, out of the UK. And it's funny because, you know, we've always had some of Malia's music, and we played, and so what we got to catch up with, and she told us about it, and your reputation precedes you, but of course... I loved the statement you made when you just called in before I got you on the phone. You know, and I told you that what better, you know, you have to talk to Memphis just because of who you are and what you've done. And you made one statement to me, and it was, I learned everything from where?
Memphis.
Thank you. Yeah. That's okay. I just want
to drag it out of you for God's
sake. Trying to make a record half as good as most of those Stax records. That's all I've been doing.
That Stax sound is very obvious. I mean, it's clearly Memphis, of course, but it's such an indicative, very derivative sound. We've talked to a lot of the guys from all three classes of Stax, and I always ask them, you know, where does that come from? Where does that Memphis sound come from? And the only correct answer I got was out of Howard Grimes, and he's like the architect of the Memphis sound, and he said, "Baby, it's the people."
Right.
Sure.
That's exactly what it is, and you out there, you know, looking for that same sound that we have here, you're just part of that recipe.
No, he's, you know, Mr. Dennis has been knocking boots at this for quite some time now, though.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, too, because, you know, we worked with the Memphis Horns for years and years. In fact, they were on the road with Cray for years. And,
right.
You know, I used them on I don't know how many records. You know, so I spent a lot of time back there at Ardent, as you know.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know, what's really funny, just I'm going to go ahead and do this because we're celebrating 7 years live on air, by the way, today. And actually the official date's July 1st, but you know, it's Saturday, so we're doing it today. We're in the building that was the old Twilight recording studio. We're in the old Twilight recording studios. This is where we broadcast out of, and then eventually turned into Leeway recording studios. Okay. That was built with Brad Dunn, Duck Dunn's nephew, along with that. And of course we're getting our recording studio on the other side of this room and building that we're in, set up as well. I just thought I'd throw that out there, you know, in case. In case you want to come here.
there's still a lot of that Charlie Rich mojo hanging on the walls in here.
Oh, you know, I bet there is.
Just out of curiosity, though, I did some stalking, and of course I was like always trying to find out kind of where you got your gig and where you got your start, and it's, you know, like every other blues guy on the planet, you know, there's a simple foundation for you, you know, and of course we know like all the cool people you've done, but in the very beginning it just says that you started at this time, and you started playing for Philip Walker, and then away you went. So I'm trying to fill in the gap of, you know, how you fell into this.
Well, I went down to Los Angeles from Grants Pass, Oregon, to become a trumpet player because my uncle was connected with big bands and Harry James and all those kind of people. And in fact, he got me a job ultimately with Dot Records. And the first guy I met there was Bruce Bromberg.
Wow.
And so it was like, I mean, that pretty much says it all. Bruce, of course, was already at that time way into the blues and country and gospel, and you know, what little blues I did know about that time, I learned the other stuff real fast from him, and then he's the one, of course, that hooked me up with Philip Walker.
I see. Okay. When you said Dot Records, my world got super small super quick, because, let me tell you, because Brad Dunn's, one of his uncles, was one of the guys that helped start Dot Records.
Really?
And I'm trying to remember which one that is.
It's a big family.
It's a huge family.
One of the members down in Florida?
No. Mm-mm.
So it's got to be the West Coast guys.
I don't know. No,
that's such a big family.
No, there's some up north, too. But I just sat there, and I just kind of got real quiet in my head. And I'm like, this is a very incestuous genre, because everybody just, you don't realize how many people kind of work together. And so your dream, you know, and for those of you who are tuned in, you know, we're talking to the coolest cat on the planet, Dennis Walker. Your dream was to be a trumpet player, and you were going to do this whole big band thing, right?
Right.
So you fall into this, start working with Philip Walker, and what's going through your head? You know, what avenue opens up in your head that says, this is where I'm going, this is the direction I'm going into? What happened?
Well, what happened just real quickly was, before that, Bromberg knew who Long Gone Miles was. He found that Long Gone Miles was needing a band. So we were working at Dot Records, and he said, look, that's us. Because he knew, of course, about Long Gone Miles, who was like a protege of Lightning's. And so we go over there, and he says, I play guitar, and he plays bass. It's like, really? And so Long Gone was so flabbergasted by Bruce, because he knows so much about blues, that, you know, we became his band. And so that's when I started playing bass.
Okay.
So then when I went in the Army, and then I came back, I was in the Army 67 to 70, but I played trumpet in the band.
Oh, wow.
And then as soon as I got out, I went back to L.A. and started playing bass again.
Wow. Thank you for your service, sir. So you're originally from L.A.?
No, I'm originally from Grants Pass, Oregon.
Okay. Now, what's the Memphis connection? How is it that you come here and figure out that you learned everything you needed from here?
Well, because, you know, that's what me and Richard and Robert grew up on, was listening to all that Stax stuff.
I mean,
and then we had finished one record, and we were having a party, and we heard an Al Green tune that was mixed. It was called Toots in Memphis. And it was an Al Green tune, I can't remember which one, Love and Happiness.
Yeah,
we listened to that, and it was like, yeah, that's what we want our record to sound like. So I called up Arden, and of course, it was John Hampton.
Wow.
So from there on, I did probably 14, 15 records back there.
Wow. And so this sound, this vibe, I mean, when you say you want your record to sound like that, and obviously at the time you meant that you wanted it to be recorded that way, so it would sound that way, but when you got here, you learned something different, did you not?
Well, I learned what a genius Hampton is, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, that's really what I learned.
Wow. Yeah, he had a great pair of ears on him, man. He knew
he was just a great musician, and you know, some engineers are and some aren't, but
right.
He was just a great musician.
Right. And it's so funny because a lot of people kind of veered away from the thought that he was actually truly a musician. You know,
Hampton?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know who those people are, but they shouldn't be in America.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, this guy was just a really, really good musician. That's why he could go from engineering to producing like the Gin Blossoms.
Yep.
And make a killing. Yep. I mean, he was really good. And he learned most of his stuff from John Frey.
There it is. And see, now you're now you're in our house. Now you're in our yard. So basically you wind up spending all this time making records here in Memphis, okay? And by virtue of doing that, you're being exposed to not only to the incredible engineers, incredible producers and stuff like that you're working with, but you're also being exposed to the talent, you know, in the music here. And when you get here and you start really kind of, you know, kind of delving into that, what are you finding? I mean, when you listen to it, what are you finding? You're like, oh, okay, this is so much different than everywhere else. And did you start understanding it? I mean, were you picking everybody's brain? I mean, what were you doing?
You know, I cut everything out here and then I would take it back there because like you just kind of mentioned a minute ago, you know, the guys that made that Stax sounds were the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we always had that, like, all right, we're going to have this sound of our own, and it's not going to be quite like that.
Right.
But Hampton could take that, and of course, it was always engineered real well already, but Hampton could take that then and not make it sound like a Stax record, but just make it sound like a real, real big record.
Wow. And that was a thing. Then that was a big thing for you.
How did you keep the West Coast swing out of that stuff?
Because, oh my! Here, okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. I mean, we've got a band here that does it, and they do it very well. But being out there in Los Angeles, you know, blues is a little different out there as opposed to that Memphis sound. So,
yeah.
I would think that you would probably have incorporated a little bit of that LA vibe into what you were thinking.
You know, not at all. I never paid any attention to that L.A. stuff. It was, no matter where I was, it was all going to sound like Memphis.
Well, now the question is, why didn't you just move here?
Yeah, why didn't you move here?
You know, Wayne Jackson kept telling me the same thing. You're here. And you know what? I actually looked for houses there for a while, but anyway, no, I should have moved there probably.
You probably should have. I'm really surprised you hadn't. You know what I mean?
It harkens a little bit to the whole thing with Cyndi Lauper and her blues album that she did.
Right, right.
And her intention was to go to Nashville to record the thing. So on her way, she stopped into Memphis to pick up some of these musicians, and then she realized what was here because she hadn't really spent any time in the scene here.
Right.
And she said, "Oh, screw Nashville. I'm just going to stay here in Memphis and make this
and
record.
Make the record
and
here."
Which she did, mm-hmm. And it turned out to be just a dynamite record.
Yeah. Well, you know, for Dennis now, for you. So you get into the mix of kind of what's going on here. It leads you down kind of a crazy cool path. Not only, you know, are you, you know, you're a musician and you're starting now, you wind up, you know, writing, and you wind up, you know, not only songwriting, but then you wind up also producing, and you also wind up playing, you know, next to some of the coolest people on the planet, including, you know, our very own, you know, B.B. King. And and so as this as these moments are coming and laid out before you, I mean, do you ever just do you ever realize just what incredible history and what incredible moments that, that are being made, or is this just one of those? This is a crazy cool ride that you're on and you're just having fun. I mean, did you have a plan? Did you have a purpose? Did you have a I know this is what I'm doing. This is where I need to go. Idea. When you did this?
You know, no, not at all. And, you know, that stuff happens so fast that, regrettably, you miss a lot of it. And I'm just, in fact, now beginning to enjoy a lot of that.
Really?
Well, because you go from, you know, a Maria Muldaur record to a John Campbell record and then to a B.B. King record, and then you go back and do another. And it's like, wow, this is really cool. I mean, and it really is cool.
Well, I mean, think about it, though. I mean, you wound up doing some stuff with some of the most iconic, you know, people that were, you know, trailblazers and you know, pinnacle points, you know, of music. And you're sitting aside from them. I mean, you're talking about the people's, you know, I mean, Otis Rush, you know what I mean, is one, too. And it's that opportunity just showed up and you were there at the right time. I mean, how did that work?
You know, a lot of that is. And again, a lot of that happened because of my involvement with Lowell Fulson, which got me, you know, all over Europe and everything, playing in his band, the Percy Burke Mayfield's band and stuff.
Wow.
And so yeah, a lot of that was, I guess it was.
You had to think about it for a second now, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, really, it does. I sometimes regret. And then, you know, something happens like with John Campbell.
Right.
And then just all of a sudden in the middle of that roar, it's immediately cut off. It's like, I never got over that.
No, I bet you didn't.
What was the process then? I mean, because you were writing so many different styles and working with so many different artists. Was it a matter of you spending some time and crawling around in their head for a minute to kind of see where they were going? Or, I mean, how collaborative, I guess, is really kind of what I'm getting at here. I mean, let's use B.B. King as an example. I mean, his music was very... very identifiable as such. So, I mean, how much of it was collaborative as opposed to just either single you or Mr. King?
Well, in B.B. King's case, you know, that playing with my friends, you can, I mean, that's just an old style Kansas City. Even the language is old style Kansas City.
Yep.
So, in the case like that, you know, it's pretty defined what. And B.B. will and won't sing, and even the words and stuff. But it's that way with everybody. Each one has an individual language, and as a writer, that's what's so interesting, because you really do have to learn their language. Most people to this day don't have a clue that I wrote all those lyrics for Campbell.
Yeah.
Because they sounded just like him.
Well, seeing that's the beautiful thing about you, you know, and what you're able to do. And you sit down, so... speaking of, at some point, you know, everybody's starting to figure out that you have this knack for being able to come up with things and write for, you know, people. And you know, there's something to be said for that person that's like behind the curtain, you know what I mean? That kind of makes this magical stuff happen. And it's almost, I mean, like me, myself, I think it's a really cool place to be, only because you don't feel so restrained. And you have that ability to be able to, you know, kind of expand and expound, you know, on a couple things.
Right.
But there is a talent.
One of those guys that I was Peter Lubin, who I originally worked for at Mercury that discovered Cray.
Wow.
And then I started on the John Campbell. But Lubin was, you know, he was another really, really good musician and A&R guy.
Wow.
And he, you know, he just like with the Campbell thing, he said, here, write it.
So that, okay, well, that answered that question. You said, you know, they go, here, write it, just because I knew you could, you're like.
Oh, so Campbell has this thing, well, I want to write a song about a lineman, and you just sit down and go, okay, here's Wichita Lineman. I mean, is that what that was?
That's usually pretty well, it would happen. you know, if he had an idea, you know, we would sit there, and basically what I would do with Campbell or anybody else is just get them talking about it a little bit. And, you know, the ideas will not necessarily come out 1, 2, 3, but if you get them talking about it, the ideas will come out about, and you want to find points in that there's some feeling about it.
Well, there's like a twist of a phrase that would have to work to make it happen. It's like, oh, I like that, you know.
Yeah.
Did you even realize, Dennis, that you were a songwriter? when you got started in all this? Did you even think that you were one? Be honest.
No, honestly, well, we got started songwriting because when Bruce and I first started producing those real early records, you know, we paid for everything, and we realized that we couldn't pay publishing to anybody, so we thought we better write our own songs because then we just wouldn't pay ourselves.
Okay.
And so we started writing, like, for Lonesome Sundown, and, you know, I think my first ones were with Philip Walker.
Okay.
But that's why we actually started, and then right away, you know, I thought, wow, this is a lot of fun.
I know, you figured out you were good, and I'm glad.
Long run, a lot of work here, man.
I know, right? But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad, Dennis, and those of you that are tuning in, you know, Radio Memphis around the world, of course, we're celebrating our 7th birthday, and what cooler way to celebrate than to be talking to legendary Dennis Walker, who has now just told us that the only reason why he started writing was because that, you know, he was an indie, unsigned artist, and, you know, they were having to come up with funds, and it was cheaper to write their own songs, and it just so happened you got lucky because you were really good at it. Is that what happened?
Well, I wouldn't say I was really good at it either. I mean, but I got real interested in it, and of course, then I, you know, that's one of the things that is wrong with me.
Uh-oh.
Like, when I like something, I'll just do it all the time.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Songwriting out once I learned I wrote. I get up. In fact, to this very day, I still get up and start writing at 6 a.m.
Wow, good for you. There's nothing wrong with that. Not if that's.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, really, and especially at my age, you know, it's something to get up for. But
you're young.
Shh. Yeah. That's why we started, and then I just started working it.
Wow. Well, you wound up, you know, it's funny because you wound up developing, you know, quite the style, you know, style for yourself. And one of the things that was really, really kind of remarkable is the ability to work with the different people that you're able to work with and actually, you know, write for them, you know, and that's a big thing because, you know, you also come from a side of industry where there's a lot of people who are talented, especially with their music and their talent in terms of their instruments or their voice and then to be able to sing and, you know, and things like that. And they could only take, you know, they could only take their own songwriting so far. Now, the difference between being able to write a song and the difference between being able to write a hit, I want you to define that.
Well, it's the rewriting.
Okay.
It's the rewriting. For instance, Right Next Door, and this is one, it was unusual, but I worked on that one for a year. But it's the rewriting.
Okay.
You go in and it's, oh, I got this great idea. And you just work it until virtually every word, you know, is in a place that makes sense.
I see.
And moves the tune along and colors the tune and, you know, does stuff like that. And it's in the rewriting, which, you know, young writers, even like John Campbell and stuff, he couldn't rewrite at all. So,
wow.
He's too nervous.
Okay.
But that's what it takes. That's what I do.
You know, and it's funny because I have never heard anybody say that. I have, in all the times I've ever asked anybody the opportunity of what constitutes, you know, being able to make that hit, I have never heard that statement. And I'm thrilled. Are you kidding, man? It's some new stuff. It's some new. There's some new info here. But it almost sounds like it's kind of a, you know, quite that secret decoder ring, you know, unlock the code moment that. Is that what it is? Is that everybody will write a song, you know, and it's like once they get it down on paper, they feel like it's solid, it's done, and you know it's finished. That's not the case, and it needs to actually have more time spent. Is that ultimately what you're saying?
That's generally the truth. There's three parts to writing a song. You get that initial urge, and you write this stuff. Then the second part is the rewrite, and the third part is knowing when to end it. Initial surge from writing a song, it's so strong, it's like, oh man, this is cool, I think I'll write another one.
I got you.
So they don't really go back and really, really work out you know, the small parts. Are the conjunctions in the right places, you know?
Right.
You know, does that make sense for that to follow that?
Right.
Because that's how we all work. What happened? How do I feel about it? What am I going to do about it? Psychologically, that's when people are listening, that's how they easily can follow a story.
Wow. So, out of curiosity, there's three parts from what you just told me. And the last part, you know, is knowing how to end it.
Uh-huh.
How do you know how to end it? Stop it, Rick.
It takes some time to learn that, but you know, you write that first one, which is a lot of fun, and then you do all that rewriting, which, you know, at a certain point, then you look down every line and you see that's it. You know, and then you look back up and you think, oh boy, I could, you know, do this or I could do that. Then it's like, no, that's it. You've got to, at a certain point, because it'll become another song. So you know it, and sometimes it takes some experience to a certain extent, but you know it, and you have to, at a certain point, stop.
Bad art is overworked, and good art is abandoned.
Yeah.
I've heard this from especially a lot of writers. There comes a point where you just have to say, this is it, and even though I could sit here and noodle with this thing for months, yeah, I'll just destroy it, and it ceases to not be what I went to approach it with. And that's, sure, I think that's what Dennis is into here.
Yeah.
You know, I was over there with Trey when he did that stuff with Clapton, and I was sitting up there, and they were playing this groove, and it was such a cool groove. I went back to my room, and I wrote this thing called Midnight Stroll. It was on one of those records. And so I wrote it, and then I rewrote it, and I rewrote it, and I rewrote it. I thought, oh boy, this is getting worse all the time, which it was. And then we needed a song, and I went back and peeled all that stuff off to the very first thing I wrote, because it had the aliveness to it.
I see.
So you can, in fact, you know, and that's the case where one time maybe it really did work.
Maybe once.
Yeah, very
often. Okay.
But the roots of it are there. That's
exactly.
Yeah. That's the thing about, like, if you sit at I don't know your physical process of writing, but if you're sitting at, say, like a laptop or a word processor, and every time you make a change, those stuff that you'd originally written is not there anymore. Unless you know, if you sit down with a notepad, it doesn't go away.
Well, you know what? I never throw anything out. I got my computer. It just keeps running it farther down the page and whatnot. Because a lot of times I'll start a song and I'll be working and working, and they say, oh, brother, I had the best idea right there. You know, so I keep everything.
And then you work it into something else, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, most times I won't use most of that, but I just keep it until I'm sure.
Wow.
Well, and also in the life of a song, it seems to me, though, that, you know, what you've written, and then what you take to the studio, there's subtle changes there as the song progresses. And then once the song is released and then the artist is taking it out on the road, it matures a bit. The song starts to take on its own little subtle changes over time, and I'm sure that had to have been a thing with you.
Oh, it was such an obvious thing, you know, because, you know, up through Strong Persuader, we never had any time at all. And, you know, we'd cut those things, and then they'd go out on the road, and, you know, they come in a year later and they say, oh man, now that's how that's supposed to sound. In the meantime, you know, the record had been out 9 months.
There it is.
But, you know, we did what we did, and then you're right, it takes on, you know, a completely different face of its own.
And it's not a bad thing, really, because, you know, what you've recorded may be one thing, and then when you go see that, you know, like if you go see Robert Cray perform, and it's like, well, that's not the version that I own, but still, this is really, really cool,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think it increases the value of what was recorded.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I do, too.
Wow.
You know, I was like, they cut us live a couple times, me and Lowell and Phil over there in Japan, and, you know, both times it was like, geez, that was pretty good, but I wish they'd have caught us in Sapporo.
See, and that's the difference. That's the big difference for you. You wind up, Dennis, like I said, we haven't even scratched the surface of everything you do, but one of the funny and interesting facts that I did learn in how you came to me, obviously, is that, you know, you obviously, not only with the, you know, people that we've been mentioning and stuff, but you wind up, you know, reaching out and you wind up working with, you know, a lot of different artists and stuff, and, you know, you're very behind the scenes and stuff. Malaya Blue, out of the UK, you know, comes into play.
Right.
And, you know, this is going to be the first time that you've actually tried to collaborate and work and do some stuff with somebody from the UK. Is that correct?
Yeah, I guess it is. I hadn't thought about it, but yeah.
Well, after all this time, I think that's what blew my mind. I was like, which is, don't get me wrong, man, kudos to Malaya. Good job, girl. You know, but it was like, really?
Well, in my defense, you know, the world has shrunk in the last 10 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. You know, yes.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, too. You know, Philip Funkhauser's bass player is produced with the band in Austria.
Okay.
You know, and so I'm helping them out a little bit, too.
Wow. So you're all over the place with that stuff.
Well, like I say, it's a real small world now.
It is a very small world. It's also such a small world. I actually learned something else that you do on the side, which I think is pretty amazing, is the Rockademics, the teaching program.
Oh, yeah. That was really, really cool.
Yeah. So here's somebody who's just so humble and behind the scenes. You take the blues, you take this, you know, this crazy coolness that you've got going on, and you manage to work out and help with the program teaching elementary school students, academics, through your blues music.
Right.
Now, how did this work?
Well, you know what? John called me up out of nowhere one day, or he sent me an email, I guess, and I said, yeah, that, you know, because I have a lot of respect for teachers and all that, which, but anyway, so yeah, I'd be interested in talking about that. So he sent me some stuff, and he was doing like Chuck Berry tunes and stuff like that, just as a teaching tool. So I just told him, you know, you need to write some songs. I'll help you with that. And, you know, he's so bright that he did. And so we got, you know, my normal guys together and cut all that stuff with him.
That is perfect. That is like the blues version of, you know, School of Rock, where they're sitting there.
Yeah, but, you know, honestly, he wrote all of that stuff.
I didn't
write any of those lyrics.
Okay.
You know, I helped him a little bit at first, but he's, you know, and he's a pretty good musician himself.
Nice.
But the program's fantastic. I'm not sure where he is with that right now. He's working with a bunch of, you know, what they call real bright kids or something like that.
Okay. Speaking of working with kids or just working with people, obviously, you know, Dennis, obviously you have to get approached a lot. You know what I mean? And a lot of people going, hey, work with me, that kind of stuff. Do you have certain standards or do you have certain protocol and stuff that you kind of follow as to whether or not you work with artists?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I guess so.
Okay.
You know, like in Malaya's instance now, mm-hmm. I mean, she's got this incredible voice. She's got a really good manager, Steve.
Yes.
Whose last name I won't try to pronounce.
I think it's Jurglovic. I'm not sure. Big shout out to Steve because I know he's tuned in. He's listening.
Oh, yes. Well, anyway, so, you know, she's got him work, and, you know, he's done all sorts of things, and she's real bright.
Sure.
She's already a pretty good songwriter.
Okay.
Of course, again, that voice. So, you know, when you bring something like that, sure, I'm going to be interested in.
Perfect. So, obviously, you got to have a nice little foundation, nice little talent kind of mixed in with that would kind of be helpful.
Well, it's another thing, you know, it's just like, and that's what I'm really trying to help her with, and but in my case, it's like having to learn her language, and, you know, it doesn't make that much difference that she's English, but in fact, it does sometimes, just a little bit. They do say things just a little bit differently.
Right. But it's kind of cool though how you're able to kind of collaborate, you know, on that essence. I mean, is that probably one of the main things that's different for you as far as working with her versus working with, you know, the people that you're accustomed to working with here in the States?
You know, it really is about the same way as always. Right now, I'm just her husband is a real good songwriter too, that plays keyboard, and they work out stuff. So I just been kind of talking to her about how to do it and then giving them some lyrics that kind of, you know, help her so she can see. In fact, she sent me a really good one today.
Nice. Very nice.
Real good one.
Well, this is going to be
I have it in my head as I'm listening to this, because I'm always fascinated by people who do what you do, Dennis. I mean, it's hats off to you for, you know, finding this passion to write like this is brilliant. But I just imagine that you have like a filing cabinet of some sort. And if I came to you and I said, hey, Dennis, I need a song about old pickup trucks and beer, and you could probably just like, oh, here you go, take this one. I mean, it's what it seems like it is with you.
You know what? I don't believe in the old stuff like that, but I could write you one if you'd give me a day.
Perfect.
No, seriously, because, you know, there's ways to do it, and you know there's ways to do it. And,
sure.
And, you know, I would look back at that old stuff and think, well, that's how I felt then, and I don't feel quite that way now.
So yeah, I bet you do.
That's what I would do in a case like that. I never go back and try to revisit a set of lyrics from before.
That is so strange.
Yeah, so you're not writing songs that just sit there and just, okay, maybe someday this thing will have a life, or maybe some artist I might meet that might be. It doesn't work like that with you.
Not with me, because generally speaking, I'm writing for somebody to begin with.
Okay.
You know,
that way it's not wasted.
Every song I might write that's a good one for just about anybody, I will have written at least 4 or 5 other ones.
Wow.
You know, but. And writing, any kind of writing, I mean, you have to feel it. You have to get a feel for it. And, I mean, you have to feel something. And so when you go back and look at it, the feelings, I just don't do that. I just write something again, write something else.
So if I came to you as a musician and I said, hey, Dennis, I need some help with a tune, I'm probably going to wind up singing about 3 or 4 other songs along with that one. Is that right?
Huh? Pardon me?
So if I hired you, if I was a musician and I hired you to help me work on a tune, it's not just that song that we would be getting. It sounds to me like it's like, well, here, while I was writing this, here's like 3 other tunes that I think might work as well. Is that how that works?
You know, normally I wouldn't give them the ones that I threw out. You know, I got good enough sense to know whether it's any good or not.
No, right. Good for you.
Yeah, that's
well. Well, I mean, I'm 75 years old, so I can look at one of my tunes and tell you whether it's any good or not just as well as anybody else.
Awesome, brilliant. I love it.
No, you've been around.
Generally speaking, if there's 3 or 4 tunes like that for somebody, what I would notice is that through those 3 or 4 tunes, I had been working out basically the final one.
I see. He's saying that he may have written that many, but that person's only going to get one.
I got you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it takes a while to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the, I mean, and I think that's the whole gist of it, is that, you know, there's the 3 stages of songwriting, okay, you know, and then, of course, you know, being able to, you know, and, of course, the rewrite, the one that keeps sticking in my head, you know, big time. And you saying that, you know, it's you know, I'm going to have these, you know, these many, you know, ones I've written and before I finally get it right and stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of time and there's a lot of investment. This is also the same cat that gets up at 5 and 6 o'clock every morning and starts writing. You know, and it's just, you know, that's in you, that's in your blood, that's what you do. This is probably part of the advice when somebody, a young person, comes up to you and says, how can I be successful? What are you telling them?
Well, you know, in that regard in particular, you know, if you really want to do it, I mean, treat it just like you would any other kind of job and take the time to do it. And you're going to discover that, you know, those moments of brilliance are much more liable to come to you when you're sitting with a pen in your hand than it is while you're off at the drive-in someplace.
No.
But I mean, it just happens that way. And you know, then there, you know, there's also, you know, if you sit down every day and just, what am I thinking about today? Or in my case, whatever I'm working on, but what am I? And you just get an idea, and then you just get an idea, and you get an idea, and then maybe something will start firing off.
Is it based?
You know, my subconscious is so ready in the morning. I got to get my computer on and get my hands on the keyboard, because that first 10 minutes, it'll just start throwing all sorts of stuff out.
Perfect.
It's a lot of fun.
Perfect.
That's so cool. Are you writing from like like personal experiences mainly, or is it some type of a what-if scenario, a fanciful scenario?
No, I write almost always from personal experience. So, you know, so I can get some sort of feel for it. You know, and of course, then I can layer it over onto the other person, but that's where I get, you know, the ideas from, something that may or may not have happened for the most part.
Maybe an overheard conversation at a restaurant somewhere.
I could do that. That doesn't sound like me, but yeah, I could, yeah.
He could do that.
Well, that's how Money
sure
for Nothing from Dire Straits.
Go, Rick. Why don't you write that one?
I'll get on that. Well, Mark Knopfler, that's where Money for Nothing from Dire Straits came from, was a conversation he overheard between two guys at an appliance store.
Well, I understand he wrote that in one take, and yep. That doesn't surprise me.
One shot. Well, he's talented like that anyway, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, this guy's in another word. I'll tell you, you know, the best songwriter is ever Kris Kristofferson for
Dire
Straits.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Wow. You know, I mean, that's, if you notice, too... You know, working with all those blues guys and stuff, but, you know, I came out of the Oregon Mountains, and then, just to make it short, when I got down here, Kristofferson was every place on the radio.
Nice.
And that stuff was so good. It was like, geez, I should be able to do that. Help me make it through the night. I listened to that and think, geez, I bet I could do that.
And that was quite influential for you.
Yeah, but really from about right next door, that's all Kristofferson stuff, if you really look at it.
Wow. You're such a time capsule, though, for stuff, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And I tell you, you know, Dennis, just out of curiosity, you know, you've watched... From the blues side and rock side of the house, for sure. But, you know, you've watched industry, you know, kind of rise and fall and change, and, you know, platforms go crazy. What doesn't change for you?
Well, to me, it's still all about the songs.
Good for you.
Yeah, I just get up and it's like, even if I don't have somebody to write for, you know, it's still, you know, just fun. Because at this point, with me especially, it's all about the language, learning how to use the language. So you can study that by yourself,
right?
All day.
Right. You can. You absolutely can. The music business now versus you coming through the ranks, I mean, what do you think about it?
You know, I don't have a clue what the music business is about right now. The one I knew is completely gone.
I see.
I don't have a clue.
You don't study it too close these days, Dennis. It'll make you sick in some cases.
I wouldn't understand it anyway. I still don't even have a cell phone.
Oh,
good for you.
Perfect. Good for you, man.
Good for you, man.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, talk to him on his time. I hear you. That is fair. Well, see, now I feel privileged, man. You set time out for it and everything. Good stuff. That's fantastic. You know, sweetheart, I want to thank you for hanging out with us.
Sure.
I wanted. Do you ever leave? Do you ever come this way? Do you ever come here anymore? Do you ever come to Memphis?
I haven't for a while. I was down at Malico last summer and did a record with Wolf Stevenson down there, with Philip Funkhauser down there.
Okay.
And we were going to do that. I mean, at first Philip asked me about that, and, you know, unfortunately Hampton's gone.
Yeah.
And the John Fry too. So
yeah.
I really don't. But anyway, we went down to Malico, so I haven't been back there for a while.
I don't know, man. Maybe you ought to, like when the next IBCs, you know, comes through and stuff, maybe you ought to make a plan.
Just, well, I'd love to.
You need
I would
to.
Love to.
Man, why don't you come here. Come here.
You can be a judge with me over the IBC. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do that.
See, there you go. Okay, you know what? That's going to happen. We can help that. You can help.
Hey, the last time I judged, which last year was my first year doing it, but I wound up, you know, meeting
Bobby Massano.
Bobby Massano. That's, you know, that was a whirlwind experience.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a great guy.
Oh, and then right after that, Bobby winds up coming here, finding us, crashing
the
in, and sitting in on the During and Around the World show, and like took over half of it, you know, and then serenaded it. It was fantastic. We had such a great time with him. You know, he's hilarious. That's what you need. Just so you can see what, you know, see what's coming through and what everybody's still getting stirred up about. You need to come do this.
Well, I would love to, actually, you know, because I can't remember the last time. Yeah, it's funny, though. I'm just sitting here. I got a picture of me and John Hampton on my wall here.
No.
But anyway, I haven't been there for a while. I'd like to see what Memphis is like altogether.
You need, okay.
It's changed.
It's, well.
It's still hot, but it's.
Yeah.
We're making some good music down here, and every day I'm just. I marvel at the level of talent that is here, with especially with the younger players that are out there, the people that we get to discover on a daily basis, and it's absolutely just remarkable to hear them.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, you know, these kids today, is just dumbfounding what they can do.
Oh, it's crazy.
I know, and you know, they get up, you know, if they're 4 years old, and they see this stuff happen on the internet, and they think, well, that looks like I should be able to do that. And at 4 or 5, they can do anything. You know what I mean?
YouTube has become the great educator. And
you
I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel dumb. I feel kind of dumb, man.
I don't know if you're learning it. You know, it's like, well, you know, like you said, you got a 5-year-old that is, you know, playing the lead guitar licks from an AC/DC cut. And you just go, well, yeah, but okay, you're a mimic. Which is, I guess, is good, but where's the creativity? Where's the originality in any of that?
Well, it'll either come out or it won't. You know what
good
I mean?
Good point.
But you know, the thing is, you know, when I was growing up and my dad played music, I mean, virtually all the time. That's where I got my musical instruments. You know, but it was like a dream. This music was coming, especially up here in Oregon. This music was all coming to a kid like a billion miles away. You know, and there'd be Lester Young, or, you know, there'd be Ray Brown, Oscar Peterson or something, but it was all coming from far away. These kids now, it's like they want to hear Oscar Peterson, they just go back to YouTube, and there he is.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
before we cut you loose, I do want to ask this question, because, you know, you're steeped in, as a writer, you're playing around with different artists and different styles, and do you have a favorite? Is there a favorite song of yours anymore, or is it just, you know, hey, I'm in the mill?
You know what? I really don't have a favorite song of my own, but Don't Be Afraid of the Dark goes through my head all the time, to where I wish I'd never written the damn thing. I mean, every day that thing is going through my head. And I'm sorry I said that, but every day.
No, that's awesome. I'm so glad that you said that, because there's some people that have been like behind closed doors and locked rooms. Go, if you ever tell anybody that I ever said that about something I've done, I'm going to kill you. But you at least you admitted it to, like, you know, everybody listening, the planet, you know, and so yeah, at least you know, and you're okay with it. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I'm looking so forward to see how Malaya, her next album, Malaya Blue, is going to come out. And I just, you know, we got to chat with her, you know, obviously, you know, which led to us, you know, talking with you here on Radio Memphis, Dennis. And, you know, she was so thrilled and, you know, and so just, you know, enamored with, you know, the stylistic ways that you guys are collaborating and working on some stuff. And it's one of those things where, I'm curious to see what it's going to sound like since you've touched her. You know what I mean? And it's going to be one of those, because I've got all her other songs, you know, and I'm going to be looking for something very specific. And then I'm so excited to see where it goes.
Well, so are we. I mean, really, so are we. You know, we're just kind of getting started, and she's just, you know, I think together we've written 5 or 6, and maybe 4 of them are actually fairly good.
Wow. Wow.
But, yeah, so are we, just to see where it's going to go. But she's talented. It's going to be good. I can guarantee you that.
You're an amazing man. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here. Yeah, and especially during our birthday celebration. So it was a nice birthday treat for us to be able to talk with you.
Thanks for calling.
Are you kidding, man? We're going to have fun. Look, I want to be able to keep in contact with you. I want you to come to Memphis.
When you come in, man, we'll
remind you. We'll get you the barbecue, you know. We'll get you the musicians, you know, that are well played and stuff like that, but still need direction. You know, that way you can help them out. You know, we'll get you, we'll make you judge an IBC, you know, IBC competition, you know, sit next to Rick. And that way you can see kind of what's coming through from everywhere. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be great.
You have a place here. too, you know, with Radio Memphis. Anytime you need anything from us, or you just want to chat,
well,
or you want
you.
To come
thank
by.
Thank you very much.
Are you kidding? Yeah.
You need like a drum track or something laid down. You just let us know. We'll take care of it for
whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll just get Willie up here to do it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Absolutely. Enjoy your afternoon. And again, we thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Radio
sure.
Memphis.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon, honey.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Rick.
Bye-bye now. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen,
that was cool.
Legendary Dennis Walker. He's cool as hell, wasn't he?
I would have never known he was 75.
I knew the second he told me when he served, because he served at the same time my father did.
Well, you know, he's
young.
He's got that young spirit in him, you know.
He has to.
He sounds young. He sounds like he's very fresh, and he enjoys, you know, what he does. I mean, it's a passion.
You know why he's young? He sounds young and everything else?
Liquor and young women.
No. Damn.
Ow.
Because he doesn't have a cell phone.
That explains why I'm getting so old so fast.
I mean, dude, think about it.
Yeah, because it does age you. It's stress.
It's all this being so plugged in and stuff is what.
It's stressful being plugged in. It really
is. Yeah, and here's somebody who's legendary, who writes for, I mean, how many cool people and does all the craziness and stuff. It's like, doesn't have a cell phone, doesn't have the.
We've got that BB King tune that he was talking about in there.
Really?
Yeah, it's in the Blues Library.
Oh, hold on. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's, we go over there and just look at the, I only have it just like, you know, a few tunes. But yeah, I mean, he kind of shattered my whole little world about, about Glenn Campbell. It's almost like my life has been a lie.
What do you mean your life has been a lie?
You know, because you listen to a Glenn Campbell record and you go, man, Glenn's, you know, he's got a special place in his life. For the Wichita lineman, you know, Glenn didn't write that, and he couldn't rewrite it because he was too scared. I mean, really, Glenn?
Oh my God! Okay.
I mean, that's what it was like. Okay, I know, I get it. A lot of performers, a lot of artists, they get a little worked up about their own stuff. They, you know, and they put it into the hands of a guy like Dennis, who's going to say,
"You really thought they wrote that? Those artists wrote that?
Would think that at least he would have had more hand in. I mean, I know there's always an associate songwriter on a hit. There almost always is, because there's a lot of tweaking and stuff going on. But it sounds like with Glenn's stuff, it was Glenn goes, "I want to do a song about a lineman. I need to do it in G."
Stop it.
And then Dennis goes, "I got you covered, Bleed. We're going to make this happen." And then he grabs out a song and he goes, "Gotcha, fam." And then they go into the studio, they cut it, and it's done. And then he's like, "Maybe I should rewrite it." And Glenn's going, "Hell no, I'm too afraid to rewrite anything."
Here's the thing, though, also, too, because what you're doing is that you're making it very quick, cut and dry, like this is like Cookie Factory stuff.
I know. And that's not entirely fair.
No, it's not.
Because, like we had mentioned earlier, those songs do take a life of their own. That's very much a Glenn Campbell song. Don't misunderstand me.
No, well, that's the point, is that here's a gentleman, though, I mean, the reason why he's also very good at what he does, you know, talking about Dennis.
Because he doesn't have a cell phone.
Other than the fact that he doesn't have a cell phone, that's brilliant. He doesn't have a cell phone, and it's why he's young. It's why he's, you know, he's fresh-minded. That's why he's not stressful. That's why he's 75 and sound like he's going to make it to 100.
Probably.
You know, when it's all said and done. But one of the things also, too, is that, you know, this is somebody, you have to invest some time. When you sit there and say that, I'm going to write something, but I'm going to write it to where it sounds like it's from Glenn, or it sounds like it's for BB and stuff.
Oh, sure.
And it's not a point of like, I'm going to spend an afternoon with you drinking some beer, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home, I got it. No, it's like, no, in order for him to have done what he does, I mean,
he's got to get in their head and crawl around.
It's scary.
But think of it like this: there's another end to this spectrum on this whole thing. If you look at what Elvis Presley recorded over his career,
mm-hmm.
he didn't write a single one of those tunes, and he didn't even request to write any of that stuff. He never wrote any of that stuff. Lieber and Stoller wrote most of that,
right?
And Lieber and Stoller didn't just hang out at Graceland and go, "Well, Cheek King, what do you want to do?" It wasn't one of those. It was like, "Hey, we got you a song,"
right?
And Elvis would look it over, and then a lot of it was just the lyrics with a bare bones musically of where it was going. And then Elvis's band would, you know, Scotty and them would take it over, and they go, "Hey, let's do this,
right?"
And screw Parker in the meantime, and then we're gonna make this happen. And next thing you know, Elvis lays out another number one hit,
right?
You know,
right? I mean, think about it though. Now that you just kind of answered your own question,
I did. But I mean, there's two spectrums here.
You sure,
know?
There is.
You know,
sure, there is.
From what Dennis does is he spends some time with you, gets to know you, sees how you play, sees how you sing, what kind of language do you use when you speak, you know, what vernacular you follow mm-hmm. into, and then you got Lieber and Stoller go, yeah, this is an Elvis song. You know, Kentucky Rain.
Well, it's kind of be a mall. I personally think that Lieber and Stoller got lucky.
They did. They got lucky as hell.
No, they got lucky. They didn't say this. So they just got lucky, and it just fit that person.
Also along the same, I guess, a middle of the two, Elton John and Bernie Taupin.
Oh, there's a good one.
I mean, think about that, because Elton, of course, is a tremendous songwriter, and Bernie, I think, was really, he was the top writer on that stuff, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, Bernie was, but he knew Elton enough to know Elton would sing it like this, not like that. And right. That's what Dennis does. And that's how Elton John created hit after hit after hit. The same with Dennis.
Right. Well, you just said it, though. Now, like I said, Elton is also a very, very different situation in that, you know, not only was he a songwriter and stuff like that, but he was also the performer, like, you know, the front, his old deal.
And he's over there behind the piano.
The whole 80s, there was like five songwriters that made all those bands.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't say, I wrote this because this one was for Heart, and I wrote this one because this one was for Loverboy, I wrote this one because this was for, you know, whoever. You know, they wrote fantastic songs that were from their experiences and stuff like that, and it was just kind of, you know, and afterwards it was, okay, yeah, let me kind of rewrite and rework this for you.
Well, exactly, because, and even Dennis brought up the point that talent, you still got to have talent. You still, you know, it's like a really bad guitar player is not gonna make a better guitar player having a Martin in his lap.
No.
You know. But it's the same thing. If you're a bad performer or a bad singer, he can't write you a hit. You still have to perform it.
Mm-mm.
You still have to work with that, you know. And that's just it, you know.
I agree. What song am I looking for? Oh.
That's B.B. King and Robert Cray playing with my friends, and that's
the song that he was...
That's when he was talking about. I figured, you know, if you want to play it.
I can.
Because Robert Cray, here's another guy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Robert Cray was the bass player with Otis Day and the Knights?
No, I had no idea.
You know who Otis Day and the Knights are,
I do.
Right? From Animal House?
I do.
That one song?
I do.
And Otis Day is still doing it? Not with, you know, he's got a different bass player now. Robert Cray's moved on to greener pastures.
Of course he has.
Day in the Nights, but yeah.
I did not know that.
Otis, my man!
I did not know that. That's, God.
If you watch the movie.
Now it just came in crystal clear.
When they're in the basement, they're having the party, and they're all dancing, and you see the band doing their thing, and you look at the, and you go, God damn, that's Otis. I mean, that's Robert Cray.
That's fantastic.
That smile, it's awesome.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, he was one of the Knights.
Yes, yes. Well, Robert Cray, he's done some very, very cool stuff as well.
He came here not long ago and made a wonderful record over at Boo's Place.
Mm-hmm. He did. He sure did.
And it got picked up by, he got a BMA out of it.
He did. He sure did.
So
with that, yeah.
Much deserved.
Much, very much deserved. Well, it's Radio Memphis birthday, middle of Radio Memphis around the world right
We're
now.
We're this many.
We are 7 years old.
Happy we stopped pooping in our pants.
Stop it.
No, the night's not over.
Whatever. Yeah, we're 7.
Yes, 7 years. 7 years tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Booze and Blues is 6 years tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
7 years of, and well, you'll hear us talk about this, 7 years of rock and roll, of country, of rap, of blues, of soul, of Memphis and Mid-South musicians, they have been all over us. It's like we've walked into an animal shelter and we've had all of these people go, take me home!
And we got to expand from that because now we're in the middle of Around the World.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that is cool because when you brought the show to me originally, my thought was my initial thought was, and I think you'd be proud of me for having this thought, was that I'd like to hear what the independent young artists that are out there,
yes,
outside of the Mid-South area are doing in contrast and comparison to what is happening here.
Yes.
And you often hear, most of the time, very different styles, different sounds.
Yes.
And then you'll also hear a sound and go, well, that sounds an awful lot like Memphis. And then when you talk to them, they go, well, you know, we live in Czechoslovakia, but we really like the Memphis thing.
Right.
And that becomes evident. And that, I think what you've done with this show has been brilliant, because it's drawing those strings together and really showing it's become an educational thing.
Thank you. It's been fantastic. It's been a lot of fun.
It's a blast. I'm 7 year lucky number 7. I've heard that from a few folks already.
I know. What's it, the 7 year itch?
Is this there's probably a cream. We got some lotion. Seriously, we do. But yeah, the 7 year itch, that's the rash that won't go away.
Yeah, we're still cranking it, man. We're still doing it.
7 years, I sometimes look back and, like right now, I look back and I go, man, that's just like it just happened. It's been a blink of an eye, and sometimes it's like, God, this is
like, is this still 7 years of my life. I can't no longer have the will to live.
I have lost all care.
I can't go on.
Nobody loves us anymore.
That's not true.
No, that's not true.
Mm-mm, it's not true at all. Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna pot it up, is what you're gonna do.
I am. I'm going to pot it up, and I am going to. I'm gonna play that song for everybody.
For B.B. King and Robert Cray. Oh, that's a great song.
And so, you know, and thanks to.
But my life has been a lie, knowing that they didn't write it.
No, but I tell you what, our life has been enriched since we do know who did write
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I even though I'm not a, professional musician. I know just enough of musicianship to understand what a songwriter's place in that is.
Sure.
And I'm not that guy.
Right. And wow.
And I can't see myself ever being like that. Mm-hmm. You know. And it takes a very special cut of the cloth to be somebody who can sit down and say, "Hey, look, here's this tune. Either I'm going to do it, or I'm going to give it to you, or you know how we're going to put this together." I mean, can you imagine trying to write for somebody like Kazaa? It's kind of tough.
It would be.
But if you spend some time with her, you realize, okay, I think I could probably do this.
Right.
You know? And that's what happened. I use that as an example. But
it's being able to connect and stuff like that. Big shout out, big thank you again to Dennis Walker for spending some time with us right here on Radio Memphis.
We're
Radio Memphis.
Tear it up when he comes here. You know that.
Oh man, you know what? We're gonna take him out on the town. Are you kidding?
Take him down to Beale Street, get him a big ass beer, rest the ribs, get him laid. Big.
Stop it. Look forward to
Dennis, this is Willie Hall.
Look forward to some of his latest stuff, man, when it comes out with Malaya Blue. The lovely Malaya. So in this next year, she's gonna be having some new music and stuff, and so we're gonna see where that takes us. But in the meantime, we're gonna go ahead and this is Memphis.
Oh my God, as well as B.B. King and Robert Cray.
All right.
More Memphis you need.
It's about as Memphis as it gets. In the middle of Around the World, we're just gonna remind everybody where it all started. Right here on Radio Memphis. It's a Radio Memphis birthday. You guys don't go anywhere. I got some more music, and then of course, you know, a little bit of craziness is gonna ensue in a little while.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.